previously on Web Comics Weekly.
Like, there's a whole series of kids in Hollywood whose MO is that they have some problem where they'll never age. You know,
like, wouldn't you know how, though, you guys might not know this, but there's whole specialty agents and specialty casting things in L.A. for, like, you know, like if you need biker heavies or if you need, you know, punk guys or people with weird, you know, looks or this or that. Wouldn't it be funny if there's an entire agency that's just like, all we represent is kid with kidney problems. That's all we do.
Yeah, I think there is.
That's all. Margaret and I have been handling 17 clients since 1975.
He's like a cartoon character. He doesn't age.
He'll never age.
Not good for serious characters, but great for the wacky next-door neighbor.
He is like a cartoon character. In fact, he can pick out the one barrel that's not a part of the background painting that the ghost is probably hiding in. He's good like that.
You walk into the waiting room, they've got a coffee machine, a water cooler, dialysis.
I've got a...
Dialysis!
Yeah, maybe dialysis is the name of the agency. Comics. Hey, everybody. It's us again. We're back. In podcasts taking form. It's your old friends from Web Comics Weekly, or as we like to call it now, we're tired of your questions, yeah, and we're just going to talk for an hour.
Wait, that's – you just stumbled on the best possible solution. It needs to be called Web Comics Now, because when it's on, it's now.
There
then
it is.
Then everybody will stop. Yeah.
Done.
It's Web Comics Now.
Oh, let's change it. Web Comics Now.
Web, you know, Web Comics Currently. Then it still has the lead at the end.
That's
Welcome
true.
To Web Comics Currently. When are you listening to it? Right now. Well, when can I hear it again? When it's current.
Why don't we just get all full of ourselves and call ourselves Web Comics Smugly?
There we go.
Smugly. That sounds like a villain.
Well, then we need a dog going.
Smugly.
That was Snidely. Oh, no. Was it Snidely or Smugly?
It was Snidely.
Dog was Muttley.
But Brad,
he
thank you
Muttley.
For stepping on the joke, though. I appreciate that.
He
thank
was
you.
Was
the bad guy was Snidely Whiplash. His Snidely dog Whiplash, was Muttley, yeah. Right?
Wait, Dave. Wait. Your vague illusion didn't work, Dave. It was Snidely. Oh, thank you, Brad.
No, we're all wrong, because Snidely Whiplash was the bad guy in Dudley Do-Right.
Yes.
Well, what the hell was the – okay, the dog was in the – remember they used to do the Hanna-Barbera races where they would
yes,
like –
Yes, goddammit, his
yeah,
name was Muttley.
Hold on a second. Muttley,
yes.
Dog's
all right, thank,
name
thank
was
you,
Muttley.
Thank you for listening the fourth time I said it, Dave.
But his – but listen.
Brad and I were having a side conversation.
God damn it. Wacky Races was a collection of other cartoon characters from other cartoons. But Muttley was originally from the short called – or the show called Catch That Pigeon.
No, really? Wasn't he in the thing called where he was like a, he was the dog in the World War I thing. That's what he was.
Yeah, that was called Catch the Pigeon.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, he was the pigeon was like an air he it was World War I and the pigeon was taking orders to the, you know, the good guys.
All these TV shows that you're watching these days.
No. It was Dick
When
Masterly.
I was your age, I used to watch Catch the Pigeon. You ever seen that?
Treading into Stan Lee territory there.
Oh, I guess I am.
Oh, my God. Do you not remember
Did you ever watch Catch Pigeon?
You know what? It was. And his name was Dick Dastardly, and they were after the Yankee Doodle Pigeon. And they were called the Vulture Squadron, and they were after the pigeon.
Yes, the Vulture Squadron. That I remember. Okay.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
My friend,
like
now you have wandered into the land of truth. All right. Good work.
Thank you.
Well, let me throw this one out as a complete tangent. I was reading one of the Fall of the Hulks comics, and they've got – I don't know whether you guys are following this, but Leader and MODOK and all these supervillains have come together, and they're going to kidnap the 8 smartest men and suck everything out of their brains. And they're using what's called the Lidsville technology, which made me think of the – it's the Littleville technology, which made me think, of course, of Lidsville. Do you guys remember this from the 70s?
Yeah, I remember Lidsville.
Was like the most drug-induced.
Charles, I went back and watched that on YouTube. I'm
telling
horrifying.
You,
the intro, The intro music is a minute and 40 seconds long.
Yeah, I will find it.
And it goes through about five key change, tempo change, cinematic
reprise.
It's amazing. And then, it with Charles Nelson Reilly staring into the camera. How's that for a topper?
Here we go. I found it.
I don't think you guys will be able to hear this. But, hey, Chris, I have a question.
Yeah.
If I'm an Audio Hijack Pro and I'm hijacking and recording Skype, and then I also hijack Firefox, is it recording Firefox too?
No, you'd have to do it separate.
But
so you'd have to drop that in.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We wouldn't even be able to hear it. No, I wouldn't record it. You have to record everything.
Oh, God. Splitsville scares me. I remember this.
Yeah, it's super scary.
Oh, my God, the Magic Man.
Oh, God, he was at Six Flags.
Yeah, and this kid is, like, basically tortured by hats for the rest of his life.
It was Butch Patrick.
It was Butch Patrick.
It was Butch Patrick. Yikes.
Wow, really?
And Hoodoo was played by Charles Nelson Reilly.
And he looks horrifying.
Brad, you got to do your Charles Nelson.
Oh, how's that for a topper?
It sounds like you had an accident with a bidet.
Oh, my God. This theme song is like 3 minutes long.
I know. Television would never do this again. Oh, my God. What's with the hat on Lidsville that looks like the Twinkie the Kid? Remember Twinkie the Kid?
Yeah.
There's a hat that looks like Twinkie the Kid.
It's really neat because in the opening sequence, you know, they all rush Butch Patrick and they attack him. And you can hear their feet on this hard cement surface. I mean, the production standards are so very low. It's amazing. You can hear them scuffling on this hard surface.
Oh, all right. I want to hear a recreation of Charles Nelson Reilly's agent pitching it to Charles Nelson Reilly. Okay, look, this is a game you got to do.
Okay, here's the deal, Chuck. You get to wear green face paint, and the kids are really going to love this. And you don't have to do a lot of acting, but the intro music is about 3 hours long.
God,
they didn't have to tell him anything. He was just drunk the whole time. Like, stand here, put this on his face.
Well, that's sort of my question about Sid and Marty Krofft, though. How did they get anything on the air? Was everybody just high in the 60s? And they're like, all right, that's fine. Yeah, sure.
Well, I mean, do you think do you think that because back then, like now it seems it's real stoner, but back then that was just the aesthetic, like where now everything's got an anime aesthetic?
Yeah, kind of. Mm-hmm. But it's still super weird.
HR Puff and stuff, there's not even a through line. Like their own story.
I can't watch HR Puff and stuff. It freaks me out.
It's awful. All of it's awful.
And
I go to
the flute.
HR Puff and stuff. He's your friend when things get rough. He will scare the crap out of you. You're just a kid and you don't understand this. Why is this happening?
Why does he look like one of your nightmares brought to life?
There's not a man in there. That's a real Puffin Stuff. That's a creature.
He's powered by what comes out of your butt. He's HR Puffin Stuff.
He puts a puff.
I don't remember that.
Sid and Marty Krofft. What were their production offices? Welcome to the production offices of Sid and Marty Krofft. And you just see the garage door of their mom going up in the background. Well, we're planning on moving any time now.
It's just like you walk in and someone the secretary walks up and you think she's not talking to you, but it's just because she's holding a big mouthful of pot smoke and then she just blows it into your face.
That is not what I wanted.
Welcome to the Sid and Marty Krofft.
Mr. Krofft.
Or even better though, you walk into the offices of Sid and Marty Krofft, it's just a huge living Cheshire cat up on a toadstool. He's like, welcome!
Chris, that's hilarious. Chris just sent me an Onion article. Area 36-year-old still has occasional Lidsville nightmare.
I sent the link to all of you. That's one of my favorite Onion articles. It's going to be a good podcast when everybody just sits down to read the Onion. It's in silence.
Yeah, this is the best podcast ever.
You guys still miss it?
glad we're bringing it back.
Hey, okay, hold on. Let's go through it. How many strips before I launch? 30. What tablet do you use? Wacom. what's the best ad service? I don't know.
But do I sell t-shirts?
Project Wonderful.
Don't.
How many t-shirts should I make? 1% of your audience.
Oh, God, don't get into that.
Yeah, 1 to 30%. Your mileage maker. Well, what are we doing, guys? How we all feeling about comics in general?
I don't know. I think there's a lot to talk about. First of all, Chris has moved to Seattle.
Yeah, man. that's some sizable things.
Second of all, I'm moving in 2 months. Third of all, the convention season's coming up. Like, our first convention all hanging out together is in 2 weeks. Less than 2 weeks.
Dang, really? Wow.
Yeah. So
that brings it home.
And then the crazy thing is, and I think this is what's most important, is that at that Emerald City Comic Con, our first big convention of the year, there's going to be an important figure missing from that con this year for the first time.
Oh.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Chris has lost a ball.
Oh.
So not be.
he was my guest of honor.
I don't know where I was going with that. That sounded funnier in my head.
But I don't think Penny Arcade is going to be at Emerald City Con this year.
No, they're not. They're going to be doing PAX East.
They're going to be setting
the following
up PAX
week.
East. Yeah.
Yeah, they're too busy.
So I think we're the biggest game in town, web comic wise. I mean, we might have to get into a tussle with Jeff Jacques, but there's four of us. I think we can take them.
I think we can take them.
I'm scrappy. I use that Brazilian style of you get them down on the floor.
What's that called, Chris? The kung fu that's essentially Brazilian dancing.
Oh, the capoeira.
Capoeira.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do that. Well, I figure like there's four of us. We'll just get on all the cardinal points.
Up.
No. It literally is as simple as Brad goes around and gets on all fours behind him. And then I push. And like, literally, that's our lame-ass fighting style. Four cartoonists that never got into a fight in their life.
Do you know what it looks like if I try to do that? It looks like – remember those McDonald's commercials where Grimace would just sway back and forth?
Right. We are right back on because you can't throw Mark Vick puppet creatures.
Yeah, we're right back to Marty Croft. All right, good. Yeah.
Grimace had to do that in the costume because if he just stood there, he looked like he was dead. Yeah. So he had to sway or something.
Grimace's eyes always look like death, though, in all honesty.
Yeah, they're not fun characters. What is wrong with people back then? They could not make fun characters.
When Grimace first came out, he had like six arms. Did you know that?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
Yes. Why would they do that?
I don't it's horrible. Remember, but I'm going to find it. Here you go. I found it. Yeah,
that is.
Oh. Permission forbidden. RIP, Grimace. There's the first Grimace. The evil Grimace Ronald knows is round and purple, and he has big toes. He carries shakes in every hand as he scurries through McDonald land. So, yeah, that was the Grimace. He was purple and he had four hands to steal your McDonald's.
Yeah, but now he's just a dumb friend.
Yeah, eventually they all became nice. Like, even the hamburger's like, you know what? It's not really in me. It's not true to my nature. You like, see him in the background of a commercial. He's paying for a burger. They're like, God damn it, McDonald's. Do you have to make everything nice?
He isn't a Rob anymore. He's a social worker now.
But in the meantime, you see the morning bird. What was her name? Good Morning Bird, or
her name was Birdie.
It was Birdie. Bird, yeah.
You see Birdie shooting up though. She's like, she's gone the other way.
That's why they don't talk to her anymore.
They're like, oh, Birdie, you and Mac tonight. Not
the hamburger. Mac the knife was scary as shit. Oh
yeah,
my God.
He's a horror. He's not cool.
Who actually was played by Doug Jones, who was he was all the weird guys in Pan's Labyrinth, and he was Abe Sapien.
Wow.
That's Mac the Knife.
Was he the guy that did Principessa in Pan's Labyrinth?
Yeah, he was pretty much all the scary guys in Pan's Labyrinth.
I just want to do that. I want to be able to do that voice. I cannot do it. Principessa.
That sounds pretty good, dude.
Does it? All right, just tell me that so I stop doing it. That's the key.
No, you should do it. Just try one more time. Try one more time.
Principessa.
Sounds like the count.
Two principessas.
Oh, man, I'm looking forward to Emerald City.
Oh, man.
It's just going to be 8 hours of just this.
Well, it's nice. I mean, is this going to be you guys' first convention of the year, too?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you don't count my trip to California.
That's that wasn't really so much a convention. It was more of a kind of a life-changing personal appearance.
It's like an engagement.
Ain't that the truth?
How was it, Scott? You walked. Now you got to walk right into.
That's something we can talk about.
Yeah, there we go. See, that's there. Comics related.
Completely forgot.
So I'll just pitch it right up to you. You got to walk into Charles Schulz's studio, and you got to touch the very walls that surrounded him when he worked on Peanuts all those years. How did that feel?
Oh man, It's actually, honestly. Really super hard to put into words. I wish it was easier to put into words. There's a couple things that were going on at the time. First of all, his studio is a conference room now. So the room that his studio was in, they moved his desk and all of his stuff into the museum. They kind of So up on the top floor of the museum is this corner where they have like replicated the curtain and the wall paneling, and they put up his zebra painting and all the stuff, and they've got his desk there and the chair there, and it's all kind of roped off by a big metal railing with kind of like a glass like a barrier. And you can look over into it, and you can see some strips on his table and everything. And then when you go next door to One Snoopy Place, which is the studio where now that's where they do all the licensing and licensing approval and stuff. That's where Paige Braddock is, and Lex and Justin are, and Jeannie's over there too. Every Thursday, I guess. The room where his studio, his draft table and stuff used to be, is now a conference room. So, but what they did was they took pictures of everything and framed them. And then up against that back wall is a leather couch with a bunch of Snoopy stuff on it, big giant Snoopy and Peanuts stuffed animals. And then pictures of the studio that was there before. And then the groove that's in the wall, which they recreated in the museum. But the little worn spot where the back of his chair wore the fake wood paneling on the wall is there. You can see where it is.
They even recreated that, huh?
Yeah, they recreated the wood paneling and recreated the groove or the worn smooth part. Yeah,
huh. That's a bummer though that you didn't get to see it. I was up in 2005 and they still had all his stuff in the studio.
So when you went next door to One Snoopy Place, it was all still there.
Yeah, I mean they had the recreation in the. I didn't even know they were planning on moving it, but yeah, it was all still like all his books, like the TV. You know how there's two levels in his studio.
Yeah, like You walk in. There's this little stairway that leads up.
Right. So that his old like beat up couch was down there, and there was all his old religious books and stuff with the TV. It was like some 1980s TV, and he had his desk in the corner, and they had even left like the inkwell and stuff. That's all in the museum now, huh? Wow.
Wow.
Probably better that it's in the museum, quite frankly.
Yeah.
More people can see it.
It's pretty cool, actually.
Pretty amazing place, though, for a cartoonist. Can you imagine that when it was humming and, like, he would drive into work and, you know, 10 or 15 people working there? And can you imagine yeah. that? Like, that's your life as a cartoonist? Not too shabby.
Now, what happened was I have to admit that there's a part of me that – of course I grew up with Peanuts. Everybody did. But I never really obsessed about Schulz or Peanuts or anything. In fact, it wasn't until this trip that I really started kind of delving into it. I mean, I'd bought a couple of the Fantagraphics books and I've watched all the specials. But what was dawning on me at the museum as I was looking at all this old artwork and looking at all these old strips and stuff was, and maybe it's just a part of my generation, but my biggest exposure to Snoopy has been licensing. The most I know about Peanuts is licensing. And adaptations. But I don't think I have sat down and just read a ton of them. Not as an adult. Certainly as a kid, I read the paperbacks. But to sit down and just go through Peanut strips now as an adult and to know the context that they existed in at the time, because Peanuts is a big product of its time. It was way ahead of its time. And Peanuts paved the way for things that are now commonplace in comics. So by the time, you know, I really got around to thinking about comics the way that I think about them now, it was common belief that Peanuts had kind of stopped being funny, but Peanuts never changed. The difference was that things that made Peanuts revolutionary in the 50s and 60s were – everyone just kind of caught up with them. It just became a fabric of the language. Like before Peanuts, animals didn't – you didn't hear animals thinking. Animals were just animals. The dogs didn't think. The cats didn't think. You know, they didn't have cute little sayings. The people did. Little kids didn't talk like adults. That never happened, you know. So when you look at Peanuts for the first time as a kid born in the 70s or 80s, you go, okay, it's kids that talk like adults and dogs and that talk. And they're talking about the gospel and shit from the 50s, and why do I care, you know?
Right.
So I became, for like a week after the trip, I became super obsessed with just learning everything I could about the history of Peanuts, the history of Charles Schulz, the history of his family, his thoughts on cartooning, and, you know, it's amazing, but it's also kind of sad. Good night, babe. My wife's going to bed. But it was very fascinating, but it was also kind of a don't meet your heroes kind of thing. And then also getting to meet his wife and hearing things straight from Jeannie was a really amazing insight. So, I mean, it was a real journey for me, the whole trip. But, like, to say that I was haunted by the visit is not an understatement. Like, I stood in there with my father, my dad, who's constant mantra is, why can't you be more like Charles Schulz? I got to walk into his studio and just stand there and say, do you know that right where we're standing is where he used to draw Peanuts? Like, right where we're standing right now is where he sat. And my dad got misty and he says, never in a million years did I ever think I'd be able to stand here. Never. Like, there's no way. Never in a million years. So, it was pretty awesome. Jeannie was really amazing. Like, Jeannie Schulz is sharp, and there's a lot going on in that head. So, so when we arrived in Santa Rosa, she told us that she wanted to come meet us because it was kind of hard to find the house we were going to stay at. It's kind of hard to navigate. She wanted to lead us there. So she met us in downtown Santa Rosa where we'd stopped to eat. And she's sitting down and she's talking to us and we're kind of finishing dinner and drinking our coffee. And she's like, so you started PvP in 1998. Yeah. Okay. And then it was always on the web. Yeah. And then when did you hook up? You hooked up with Image. And I'm like, yeah. And she goes, when did you win the Eisner? And I'm like, how do you know all this about me? And she says, oh, we have a dossier on you. We have a whole dossier. I had a whole dossier printed out on you. So
I love that. It's like you're meeting with Hoover. Oh, we know what you're doing.
She's like, I know this. I'm just testing you.
I'm like, well, I won the Eisner in 2007. No, it was 2006. 2005, you were
nominated. You're like, oh, right. That's right. She actually knows it better.
But no, it was crazy fun. And the only thing I can say is that you know how much of an open book that I am with everything. Too much information probably is the best way to describe me. And there's things about this trip that I just don't want to talk about. So that's how – if that's any indication of how, like, deeply awesome it was, it's like I'm worried that sharing certain parts of it will lessen it. So
yeah.
But no, pretty cool. You know, and then something I can really also talk about because – not that it was less awesome, but it was less personal and stuff was – I also spoke at the Cartoon Art Museum in San Francisco, and that place is pretty frickin' cool.
Yeah.
The two guys that run it, or the two people that run it, I had no idea that we already kind of knew them. So the curator of that museum Andrew is the husband of Shannon Garrity.
Oh.
Did you know that? Did you guys know that?
No.
No. I could have told you, but now that you said it, I know that I've been told it in the past. Let's put it that way, but I didn't remember.
And I just didn't want to believe it.
They have some pretty cool original artwork hanging up at the Cartoon Art Museum. I saw an original Watterson. I don't think I've ever seen that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. No, Schultz has a Watterson up on his wall, too. Did you see that one?
There was a wall inside the studio that had a lot of artwork
over by Paige's office. You know, like that hallway as you're going over?
I didn't see it. So here's the big tragedy of my trip is that I didn't get to see much of the museum. Like, I was so busy with all kinds of stuff and running around. And then we had dinner that one night that we all went to and stuff that Jeannie wanted to have us out for dinner. But I didn't, like, the next day we're all trying to figure out how people were going to get to the airport and stuff. And we had to take Angie to the airport because she got to fly out for the weekend. And Jeannie was like, let me take Angie to the airport because you didn't get a chance to see the museum. But Justin had told me that I saw the wall of art. Like they had some Prince Valiants and stuff. And they said that a lot of the art that was in that wall had been taken over to the museum.
Oh, okay.
And some of the – like the, he said the Prince Valiants in the studio were reproductions because they had the originals over at the museum.
Well, so what it used to be is, you know, that hallway between Schultz's like studio and like all the licensing stuff on the other side of the building?
Yeah, yeah.
All that wall was like – and you would walk down the hallway and it would be like, to Sparky, thanks for everything. To Sparky, Milt Kniff, to Sparky.
Yeah, I saw Will the Milt Kniff.
Like, holy shit.
I saw the Milt Kniff. I think I saw Crazy Cat. Did I see Crazy Cat?
Yeah, I think he has one of the few that are those big ass Sundays. Yeah.
The really cool art I saw was the original art of a self portrait that he had done of himself on the Snoopy house, laying on the Snoopy dog house. And I've seen that art before, so to see the original was pretty insane.
Pretty amazing.
Honestly, to see any of his originals were
– I know the only amazing part for me is that those suckers are gigantic, his originals.
Everybody draws huge. All of them. Every cartoonist's original art I saw in that wall, they draw.
But Watterson's are pretty small, though. Did you remember when you saw the one in San Francisco? That one's pretty small, isn't it?
The one in San Francisco was a piece that he did for the museum. They said it was actually the only piece of technical merchandise he's ever made because it was a print he made to support the museum. And then he gave them the original art to hang up.
So it was more
of like a comic book size page. But gotcha. They didn't have an original strip. So I don't know. I don't know what his originals look like. But everybody draws – all of them draw so big. There's a original Seeger in there, a Popeye, and it's humongous.
Yeah. Those guys – it's weird, isn't it? Like somewhere in the 20s they were like, paper is free. Let's just draw. Like,
they don't even make paper this big anymore. I wouldn't even know where to get a piece of Bristol this large. It's crazy. It really made me and it didn't last very long, but it made me really long for the days of traditional media. I actually caught myself in an art store, like buying some colored pencils and buying some stuff. I mean, maybe I'll get a crow quill and some ink. And I just thinking about dipping the crow quill in and pulling it along the paper. And I thought, you know what? No, screw this. That's going to end in me throwing art supplies
tears.
Out. Like, yes. Like, I'll just buy
some
micro.
Tears.
That's funny. It's pretty cool, though, man. It's pretty awesome, but, like, just sad. Like, super sad at the same time. Because, like...
God.
That's a rather appropriate summation of the subject matter. I mean, that's kind of how I think of Peanuts, is very awesome and at the same time a little bit sad. That's a lot of what he wrote was awesome and sad.
Yeah. But not even... But, like, okay, so... I guess it's impossible to go and visit something like a Schultz museum and meet someone like Jeannie Schultz and not in the back of your head just start thinking, you know, like, okay, well, how much is she worth? How much is this museum worth? Who's funding this? Like, that's just how my brain works. Like, you start trying to figure it all out. And, you know, I bought this 60th anniversary book and she was telling me about the book. She's like, you know, you should have Lex and Justin sign that because they worked really hard on that. They only had a week to put it together. And I'm like, why did they only have a week? And she's like, well, you know, first the syndicate was going to put it together, but then we saw what they were doing. We didn't like it. So we took it over and we only had a week to get it done. And And I was like, why? Like, you've got the resources. You have a studio. You have, you know, at least 10 or 11 people there. Hire 5 or 6 more people and cut the syndicate loose. Why do you even need them? You know, just replace them.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, I can't. They own the copyright and the trademark. And it's just like, oh, my God. And then to see, like, a week after returning or 2 weeks after returning to see that, like, EW Scripts is like, well, maybe we'll sell United Media. Is it United Media or Universal? It's United Media.
United
Media.
Maybe we'll sell it. I mean, think about that, guys. So, like, Peanuts is 95% of all of their licensing.
And that's provable.
Yeah, I can prove that.
But go on.
Well, I mean, for sufficient definitions of proven.
So, millions and millions and millions of dollars, right? Multiple millions of dollars a year. And they're like, maybe we should see if we can find some way to partner with someone to make this better or sell it. Like, that's what they're going to have to do. So, I mean, if there is no other syndicate with a better property, period. So if the syndicate with the property, the most marketable property, is like, maybe we should sell this, then they're all effed, right? Like, there are no more syndicates in 5 years, right?
Right.
I give it 5 years tops. I really do. I don't see how
that little.
See. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? You know what? I agree with you because, you know, it's stuff's been moving pretty fast.
Yeah. Think about 2005 versus now, and think about how the changes that are going to happen in the next 5 years.
Think of how many newspapers. I mean, really, syndicates, their main client are newspapers and other type of, you know, those sorts of publications.
But you know what? I want to agree with that 5 years, but I want to amend it. Like, what will happen is as businesses, they'll just keep getting kicked down the road. Like, they'll get sold and resold and then repackaged and sold and split apart and sold. Like, some of that stuff will still exist and will continue to exist for like 20 years, but it'll be like what happened to radio, you know, in the 40s, is that it'll just get diminished and diminished and diminished and then eventually just be music, you know?
Well, what'll end up happening is those properties will be sold to bigger companies. Like, for example, it'll be kind of like what happened with Marvel and DC, where Marvel is now just a part of Disney and DC is a part of Warner Brothers, and they're more like a branch of an entertainment company. Like, if you think about it, Penny Arcade isn't really a webcomic anymore. It started that way, but now it's built into this company that does all of these things, including a webcomic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I just see, like, you know, you don't think about it, but Henson is a Disney product.
Right.
You know? And one day Snoopy will be a Disney product. You know, or a Warner Brothers.
Right,
product.
But there certainly won't be syndicates signing new artists any longer.
No, no way.
Oh, yeah, no, I see what you're saying.
So in terms of the properties will still be around. There's always going to be, you know, the for better or for worse, somebody's going to always own that property. But in terms of syndicates, that whole idea is gone in 5 years. Because most newspapers are going to be dried up by then. There's a darn lot of them in bankruptcy right now as it is, and the ones that aren't are just slowly going to be.
I wish
just
you could talk about
nothing.
God, Brad, I really wish you could talk about that thing you told me earlier this week, but I know you can't.
Okay, don't let me, because I don't know what you're talking about, so I don't want to slip into it.
Remember when I said, can you confirm that? And you were like, no, I can't confirm it.
Oh, no, 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 we can't.
Yeah. So, but okay, think about this. I was talking to a syndicated cartoonist today and on the phone, and we were talking for the first time on the phone. And he didn't tell me I could tell anyone, so I don't want to mention it. But it wasn't Ted Rall. But we were kind of finally like, let's sit down and talk, and we'll tell each other about what it is we do. And, you know, I'm telling him how advertising works, and he's telling me about how syndicates work. And so I was
let me ask this question. Who was more surprised, you or him?
I wouldn't say I was more surprised. I think I was – the better question is, who was least surprised? You know what I mean?
Okay,
He was more surprised.
He had no idea about ad revenue.
No. So like I was saying,
he had no idea that you. Okay, go ahead.
Can I follow up on Brad's question?
Okay.
Because without revealing names, which of the two of you was more handsome?
I don't know. I don't really know what this guy looks like, to be honest.
Well, let's find out.
I'm picturing his characters. But anyway, so you know, so I'm explaining to him like, look, there's three ways that you can get ads on your website. You can go with something that's similar to these turnkey things like AdSense or DoubleClick or Project Wonderful or AdSense or AdsDAC, where they're automatic. You put the code on your site and then they put ads up. And he's like, well, how do they choose what ads go up? And I said, based on the context of the text on your site. So like Google will go through your blogs and see that you're talking about this. And then it'll start to pick up what you talk about a lot and it'll trend you. And then it'll start giving you ads based on what you talk about the most. And so he didn't know any of that. He's like, wow, that's fascinating. I had no idea. I'm like, that's why webcomics have a hard time, because you can't index a JPEG, you know. So the second way to do it is to sell the advertising yourself. Like, you as a person go out and seek people, or put a contact information up and hope that people seek you out and deal with it yourself. And the third way is to get an agency or someone to broker ads for you, to go out and like really go out there and find people and work out special projects, which is – and then that's kind of how you grow. Like, you start out with the one way and you grow into the third. And for me, it took 10, 11 years for me to grow all the way to the third tier. And he's like, wow, okay, that makes a lot of sense. And then like he was discussing graphic novels and how at one NCS thing, a graphic novel guy came out and they're like, wow, there's no money in this. And I'm like, well, there's no money if you go through comic book shops, because Diamond's a monopoly and comic book shops aren't allowed to return books. And so they're afraid to try out new things, because if they buy a book and it doesn't sell, they're stuck with it and then they have to pay inventory on it by the end of the year. And he's like, that makes so much sense. Now I know why no one's making money at it. So yeah, he was completely surprised. But so here's the interesting thing. What was I going to say? Crap.
It turns out he was ugly.
No. We were talking about how everything's going to be owned by bigger companies. And then that led me to think about this. Shoot. Well.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. I had a point, but I don't remember it now.
While you're coming around to that, let me see if I can get you started on another direction. What did you learn about syndication that you didn't know?
Oh, thank you, Brad. You brought me back to the thing. Okay. So we started talking about what I just told you about the whole Schultz thing, and how like I cannot believe that they still own the copyright and the trademark to Peanuts, and that they're maybe selling it, and I bet Genie doesn't like that. And he's like, well, yeah, Sparky, you know, Sparky sued them a long time ago for the rights to control it, at least. He doesn't own it, but at least he can control it now. And it was a really big fight. And so the reason, I guess, why they have that studio and they're allowed to like have first rights to do it, and the reason why they could say like to the syndicate, now we'll make the book, give it to us, is I guess he fought for the right to control the licensing. But he was saying yeah, that's why the syndicates go ahead and let us keep our copyright and trademark, and they have for years. And I said, okay. And he said, yeah, that's what you guys don't understand, is we own our features. And I said, no, we understand that. We just understand we understand that you own your features. We just don't think that's a big deal. Like, if they're letting you own it, then they don't care. Like, if you're not having to fight them for it, then they didn't want it. And so what I'm thinking about is there was a very, what I call a very dark period in my life, where I was pursuing selling PvP as a movie. I wasn't pursuing it, but I gave someone permission to pursue it. He was like that guy at Circle of Confusion, David, that was hounding me about that Sony deal.
Oh, right, 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 yeah.
And, like, every time we would come to this thing of, hey, listen, if you're pursuing a movie deal, don't forget, what I have now is untouchable. They can't have it. They can't have a piece of my book deal. They can't have a piece of my movie or my shirts or my merchandise. And he would always say the same thing. Those companies don't care about any of that shit. Like, that is such small potatoes for them. They don't care. All they care about is that what you're creating for the movie version of your property is a new property completely. So, like, there's your PvP, and then there's the movie PvP. And the movie PvP, they will merchandise the way they want to. And they'll want to negotiate sharing that with you and give you a cut of it. But they don't care. Like, the little amount of money you make per year making your comic strip, they think it's cute and all, but they could give two shits about it. Like, they really don't want any of that business. They could care less. Right. If it came or it went. And so if Hollywood doesn't care, like the reason why – and looking at these numbers, if Peanuts is 95% of United Media's marketing, that means Dilbert and Get Fuzzy plus everything else is 5% of their licensing.
Right.
Dilbert plus Get Fuzzy plus everything else is 5%. No wonder they don't care if those people keep the copyright and trademark. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
It's never going to affect their bottom line, ever.
It's also why United has this fantastic New York office and Universal is in Kansas City. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like if you've got Peanuts, of course you're going to have a Madison Avenue skyscraper. And if you've got – I don't know. I'm trying to think of something that's at Universal. Then you're going to be in Kansas City.
That's the problem.
But see, like he was saying to me today, like, well, I'd love to do a graphic novel of this one character I have. I said, you should. And he says, well, but I don't know what to do with it then. And I said, well, that's what you have a syndicate for. Like I know enough, just me, Scott Kurtz, over the last 10 years, 11 years of doing this, I've learned enough to where if you wanted to hire me, I could set you up with a graphic novel. I could get you into bookstores. I could even bypass Diamond. You know, I know how to do it. Like, if I had the time, I could easily do that for you. I could get you T-shirt deals and you know, and I could even sit and ship it all out for you, right? Like, you could pay me to do that. But so if you could hire just a dumbass like me to do it, then your syndicate surely could do that for you. Like, if the syndicates would get their heads out of their asses, they could set this whole thing up. And I was talking to him about how in 5 years the syndicates will be gone, and I think what I hope I see are things popping up more like Topatico, but like Topatico not run by a bunch of guys that eat ramen out of bongs in East Hampton. You know what I mean? Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
No, who would do it?
Other companies. Like, think about a syndicate. Think about if the syndicate lost their ability to do business the way they do it now, which is like, I have a sales force that takes a flying trip out to Kansas City and hits all the newspapers there and tries to sell features to those editors. Like, what if instead they just decided we don't need the newspapers? We're just going to set up basically a syndicate version of a Topatico for our features.
You're talking about something more like Amplifier?
Yeah. I mean, so, yeah, exactly. But what
the problem is that it's very doable and it will eventually happen. The problem is the scales are wrong right now for the same reason that you talked about with Hollywood money is that these guys all have, you know, 40 to 60 employees and they have huge rents to make. So the money, like, that will happen, but they have to get much, much smaller before it happens.
Oh, they'll almost die before it happens.
Yeah, they'll almost die before it happens.
And it will never happen, right? Because they'll never want to change into that, and they'll just sell off the properties. But what I'm saying is from that shakeup, let's say that Universal went tits up. John Glenn is going to be out of a job, right, as acquisitions manager. But maybe John Glenn decides, you know what, I've been paying attention to webcomics.com and I go to all these panels and I'm going to set up a new company called Glenn Properties and I'm going to start doing this.
Mm. Okay.
And then it's him and like three guys.
Yeah, now that's very possible.
Like, wouldn't that be – that's what needs to happen.
Yeah, you have one guy that's got a merchandise background, one guy that's got a licensing background, one guy that's got – you know, and then you could have a lawyer on retainer. You could definitely do it with
the TV. And it's like, you know, this is why I get mad at Image all the time too, because like there's all kinds of weird BS that happens inside comics too. Like when people used to bitch at me and say, well, Image doesn't really have a – you better go off going with Dark Horse because Dark Horse at least spends marketing and advertising dollars. No, they don't. They buy ads in Diamond. They advertise to other comic people. So Image is smart like that. But, like, Image is dumb where Image goes, we need a marketing guy. Yeah, we do. Who should we hire? oh, I don't know. Let's go to LinkedIn and find a marketing guy. No, 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 no. I know a guy that used to work at Wizard. Oh, was he a marketing guy at Wizard? No, he just used to be like a columnist at Wizard, and I really like him, and he's kind of friends with Larson, and so he'll be our new marketing director. And then it's like, what the fuck? And then he doesn't work out, and they fire him, and they're like, you know, Jim DeMonacis runs this con. He's a pretty good marketing director. Let's hire him. And then Jim's in there, and Jim's like, pulling me aside at Emerald City Comic Con going, I'm losing my goddamn mind at Image. And I'm like, yeah, no shit. You're not a marketing guy. And he's like, I'm out of here. And then they're like, we need a new marketing director. Who should we get? Do we know anyone at Marvel? What's that kid doing? What's that one kid? Who, the intern? Yeah, the intern. We liked him. He had beers that one night with us. All right. Hey, you're our new marketing director. And I mean, but that's everywhere in comics. Like, it's all like go team comics, like keep it all in the keep it all in the family.
Right.
But they just go nowhere. So I don't know. It's frustrating. But I guess it doesn't really affect me. I'm still going to wake up and do my shit tomorrow. But
well, you know what, though? I want to come back to a point that we talked about a long time ago, but I'm more and more getting worried about it. And I'll come around to why. But so I am not at all worried about syndicates dying. I have absolutely no fear about that. That's going to impact my business. Not at all. But the more I'm thinking about it, the more I am getting worried that the print distribution of comics, not that it will affect my business, but it will affect my con business if that starts to die.
How do you figure?
Because if American comic book shops, even though they're small and scattered, not very popular anymore, if they start to really die off and Barnes & Noble and Borders start to diminish their sections on printed comics, none of that impacts my current bottom line, right? Okay, so I'm still fine there. But so much of comic cons, like not the big ones, but the regional ones, the statewide ones, you know, the good size ones, a lot of that, like a big percentage of that floor is comic book shop guys or guys that trade in long boxes and all that sort of stuff. So there's a percentage of that convention that's paid for.
Oh, you say they're going to go away.
Oh, yeah. Well, no. Yeah. So what you're saying is if retailers die out because the distribution channels die out. So if we lose all of our retailers, we lose a majority of the people buying table space at the convention.
Yeah, and suddenly tables are $4,000.
Right, exactly. Or that just that because conventions are less profitable, there's less of them, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know that the two are beholden to each other.
Yeah, I'm not saying my economics
that would
on
be
this
interesting.
Are down
have
pat,
aren't we going to have DeMonacis on here next week?
I think we better, yeah.
Yeah, we can talk to him about that.
But I think we should talk to him about it because I'd be interesting to hear how he feels that if comic book industry died tomorrow – and people bought their comics online now or whatever. He's a retailer too, right? He has ties to his retailer shop. His family owns a shop in Linwood. Linwood.
They own multiple ones.
So if you know the worst happened and all retail shops went out of business, would that mean the cons?
Yeah, he'd be the perfect guy to ask.
All right, yeah, put a pin in that. Bookmark that.
Post-it note going on my laptop.
Oh, that's a question I wanted to ask you guys ever since we did this a long time ago. You guys were extolling the virtue of software called Things.
Yes.
Okay, I got one question around the table. Are you still using it?
I love it. Okay. Yeah, I'll go first. I love it. I absolutely live by it on my computer, yes.
Still using it every day.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Chris?
After my move to Seattle, I've been keeping like a calendar, and I don't know why I haven't been using Things, but like literally 2 days ago, I said, all right, time to get organized again. It's time to jump back into Things. So
Scott,
I don't know if that counts.
Okay.
All right. Not
where's this going?
Here, no. This is really exciting because today I converted Chris over to my system. So
that's right. Yeah.
So, okay. Here's the combination of programs I've been using. I am like on – I've got a boner for this shit right now, so I'm glad you brought it up. So here's my suite and how I'm doing stuff. I hate iCal because I feel like it's missing some features, and I hate –
You had a perfect tweet about that.
Yeah.
I forgot how you phrased it, but I really loved it.
Well, the thing about iCal is that it almost does what I want it to do, okay? So like I kind of live in Google, so I – paid for a Google Apps account. And Dave, I think I convinced you to do this too, right?
Yeah, I got one.
So now I have a Google Apps account, the Premier Edition. I've actually paid for an extra user so Angie can be a part of it, of the domain too. And it handles my domain. So you can tell it to handle as much of your domain as you want. And all it really handles for me is the domain version of my calendar and my mail. Like I handle the website and stuff. So PvPOnline.com mail and PvPOnline.com calendar stuff all goes through Google. So I have like 4 or 5 calendars in Google, like appearances, home, travel, business. Like there's like 4 or 5. Oh, one for Angela. And now there's another calendar I made today for Blamimations. And the great thing about Google calendars is you can share them with people. So I can share my Angela calendar with Angela and she can add stuff to it in her Google calendar and it will sync with mine. So if Angie decides she has a task for me, she can just add it to her Angela calendar, and the next time I look in Google Calendar, it's there, all right, for me. Same thing with Chris. We share a Blamimation calendar, and, you know, if he adds in that, you know, production schedule for Blamimations, it goes to my calendar. If I add it, it goes to his. So that's awesome. But I also like to work locally. And the bad thing about iCal on the Mac is that it can pull down from Google, but it has a hard time pushing up unless you use extra software. And it doesn't, like, sync back and forth real easy. So this company, BusyMac, they made a, like, they're like, well, let's just remake iCal the way that it should work. And they made a program called BusyCal. And it's, what was it, Chris, $50?
Yeah, just about, yeah.
Okay. So BusyCal is essentially iCal with some better extra features. BusyCal, you can share calendars over your LAN. You can also enter your Google information into it, and it will sync both ways with your Google calendar.
Mm.
Not only that, but Things syncs with BusyCal. So you can go into Things and say, I would like to sync Things with my calendar. And it'll say, okay, how do you want to sync it? The way I did it was any task that I give a certain tag syncs with certain calendars. So, like, my convention tag in Things syncs with my convention's calendar and my, you know, errand or home tag. So then when you go into BusyCal, on the right are all your to-dos that are even added to your calendar. If you add a due date to your tasks and things, they go right into your calendar. And they become tasks in your calendar. So,
I like that.
So the other awesome part is on your iPhone, if you have an iPhone, you can go into your iPhone, go to the settings, add a new account. And I don't know why, but you have to add a new Microsoft Exchange account. And you enter in your Google information. And it syncs your Google Calendar to the calendar app on your iPhone.
Yeah, I set that up today.
So it pulls all of your Google shit into live and syncs into your iPhone. And if you're on the go and someone says, like, let's see if we're at a con and Brad's like, hey, so we should get together, you know, we should have a conference call next week about this. You can add it, punch it into your phone, and it immediately syncs up to the cloud where Google is. And then, of course, that syncs down to your desktop at home because everything's syncing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's awesome. It is, it's a game changer.
And that's BusyCal, C-A-L?
BusyCal, yeah.
Nice.
So I like it. I like it. And then the other thing I've been doing is I've been using a notes application called Simple Note. And Simple Note is a web-based note-taking website. So you can log into Simple Note and say, I have a new note, and then type it in. All right, well, who gives a crap, right? I don't want to have to go to the website to take notes. I like taking notes on my phone when I'm on the go, and I like using a notes app like the Stickies app or the text, like open up a new text document or something on my computer. All right, no problem. Because there's an application for your desktop and an application for your iPhone that syncs with the cloud. So I have Simple Notes on my iPhone. If I'm on the go and I think of a good idea for a strip, I type it into Simple Note, it syncs to the cloud, and when I come home, it's in my notes on my desktop.
Oh, and that's nice too.
Yeah. So that's been really cool too. And that, and also the cool thing is the application for the desktop is called Just Notes. And it's this cool little like It almost replaces sticky notes on your Mac if you ever use sticky notes or opening a new text document, like TextEdit. You just it stays up in your menu bar and you just click it and you can just add a new note. And then right. So then – but the cool thing is like if you ever type something on your laptop and then you're at home and you're like, oh, shit, I typed that on my laptop. That's a text file on my laptop. You'll never have to worry about that again because anything you type on any device syncs with the cloud. And then when you're at any other device, it pulls it down from the cloud. So all your notes are always on every machine. It's really cool.
That is handy. And as long as we're in the tech talk part, you might as well tell us about TripIt.
TripIt.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I still haven't done that yet.
TripIt?
Because you've been really hot on this TripIt.
Yes.
What okay. is TripIt? That one I don't know.
So TripIt,
you're going to like this.
TripIt.com is a website. It's a free service, and you sign up for it. And what it does is you can just get a free – there's a pro account that will tell you like gauge – like if there's some delay with your plane. But I'm not that traveler. It's not like I'm so busy that I can't call 10 minutes ahead to see if my plane is late or whatever. Who gives a shit? But the free version of TripIt is you sign up for a TripIt account and it – you know, it knows what email account is yours. And then there's an email, plans@tripit.com. So once it knows who you are and that you have an account, whenever you schedule anything like you book a flight or you book a hotel or you book a car rental, you just forward your itinerary.
What?
From your email address to plans@tripit.com and it builds, it builds a fucking itinerary for you.
What?
Then you download the free app for your iPhone and it sucks it all to that.
What?
So like when I went to California, I forwarded my flight itinerary, and I forwarded both hotels that I was going to stay at, both in Watsonville and San Francisco, and my budget rental car confirmation. All of a sudden, I had this itemized itinerary, like in a list, like today you will need. Here's your flight. Here's the gate. Here's the temperature in San Francisco. Here's a map from the airport to the budget car. Here is a map from the budget car to the hotel. Here are area of interests around your hotel. It's like – fucking amazing. And then the best part is that you could say, hey, Scott, you're on TripIt. I'm on TripIt too. Let's be friends. And then I can see what your travel plans are. So I can see when you're arriving.
Actually, you know what? For conventions, for the four of us, that would be so handy.
Yeah, that's true. That's I have no idea when you guys are coming in anywhere.
Because I'm always like, well, do I go to dinner with just Brad or do we wait for Chris? Or so, I don't, you know, like.
Here's the only thing that scares me.
And then if
this.
You're like Dave and I on the phone a couple nights ago, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm coming in Friday. And he says, Calgary. And I said, no, Chicago. And he says, well, I was talking about Emerald City. And I'm like, which one is which? I'm getting all these things confused in my head.
So here's the only thing that scares me. Okay. I got an email tonight. Jared Miller wants to connect with you on TripIt.
Who's that?
So and it says, view the invitation. And so I click it and it says, oh, I deleted already. I ignored it. But essentially, someone, I guess a fan of mine or something, went and said, I wonder if Kurtz is on here and then wants to be my friend. Now, I don't know. This could be an automatic thing. It could be anybody. But like when I went to follow the invitation, it was like Jared has a trip to Boston and has traveled 0 miles. And it's like, I guess I'm not too worried about that. It's not like I don't tell everybody where I'm going to appear.
Right, but you don't want them knowing what gate you're going to be at.
But I don't think,
hotels or whatever. Yeah,
I don't.
Yeah, but also it's like you could go to 10 conventions, but you then might go to a family wedding, and you don't want everybody knowing like, oh, he's going to be in Des Moines at such and such a hotel. You know,
this message was sent by a TripIt user who entered your email address. If you'd prefer not to receive emails like this, tell us. Well, no, I want to know, but. I just chose to ignore it. So I'm sure he got something that says, Scott Kurtz is not going to share his goddamn travel information with you, you fucking stalker. But anyway, that just bugs me. Like, I think that's so offensive. It's not like we're on Foursquare or Twitter. There's no reason.
Or Facebook or whatever.
Yeah,
it's not
there's
my
no
space.
Reason I would want – I don't know you. I don't want to share my information with you. And it could be as simple as – it's some guy that wants to sell me something that doesn't even know I'm a cartoonist or anything. I don't know. But what bothered me was not that the request came in. What bothered me is that when I clicked to see what information it told me, it said, Jared wants to be your friend on TripIt. He has a trip to Boston planned. And I was like, I don't want to know that about Jared. And I certainly don't want him knowing that about me.
Yeah, but he probably couldn't see that for you. But because he initiated the
act of sharing, that
sent you some information.
But anyway, so yeah, like I've got TripIt. I have all my – I've forwarded all three of my flight confirmations for my next three cons. And if I go to TripIt right now and you can go in and edit your thing. So it says my trips, Emerald City, PAX East, C2E2. If I click on C2E2, it goes – you know, so it says Thursday, April 15th, there's my flight out. Below that, map of Chicago, Illinois. And then below that, Monday, April 19th, flight out. But now if I add hotels to that, you can. And then like my trip to Comic-Con, Emerald City, it has, I entered in Chris's house as my, or apartment as my place of staying. And it gave me a map from the airport to his house.
Wow. That is nice.
It's pretty cool. But the great thing is that, like, I don't know if you guys ever do this when you're going somewhere, but you write down a bunch of stuff or you create a new contact in your phone and you start entering all these confirmation numbers and stuff and you don't
know. Yeah.
Like, because right now if I go to my flight, there's my confirmation number.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all in there.
End up printing them all out and then I've got a huge stack of papers I'm taking with me to the hotel and I'm, you know, through, the only trying to find the confirmation number and
the only thing
I got airport
sucks.
Stuff.
About the app is that it always tries to connect to update your information. So when you're at the airport, if there's no connection, you have to wait 2 or 3 seconds to access your information for your trip because it tries to connect first, and then you have to wait for it to fail out. But that's only like 10 seconds of waiting, you know.
Oh, gotcha.
And yeah. Usually it's only if there's no connection. I had a really hard time in Watsonville because I guess you're in the mountains. You're in the mountains of Santa Cruz are right there, so it was blocking. AT&T had horrible signal in Watsonville, but yeah, I just think TripIt's pretty cool.
Hmm.
But I mean, I didn't. I usually have a bag full of papers.
Yeah, I always print out like the baggage, like the weight limits and stuff. Like,
oh, yeah. I don't
know. Maybe I'll need it. It's just 10 pages of documents.
Oh, so does it do that stuff too? Like, oh, I see you're flying on Virgin. They allow one bag for 15. They do all that stuff too?
No, I don't know. Let's see what it tells
that,
me.
Because that always trips me up. I'm always – the two nights before a convention, the night before, I'm always like, website. Let's see what they do.
So my flight says – my flight number, airline, the airports I'm going to and from, confirmation, my depart, Google map of DFW airport, terminal map of the airport, arrival time, terminal map of Seattle Airport, terminal map of SeaTac, get seating advice, display your plane seat layout. That's here. Then a link to call booking if you need to for the airline. And then it says I'm on a McDonnell Douglas MD-83. My total distance will be 1,657 miles, and it's a G-class service.
You know what would be shitty is if they're like, it's so specific that it's like you're on a McDonnell Douglas 830. 48 of those have crashed in this service life. Like, stop giving me information.
Like,
I don't
the best place to sit. Like, survivors have always been on the right side of the plane.
Yeah, exactly. In the Brazil air crash of 1996, 4 people survived. You know, over the flight or the wing.
You're like,
gosh,
right, and
up.
You're like, okay, I'll check those seats. Oh, they're taken. Now what am I going to do?
Just sweating the entire flight. Oh, TripIt.
Curse you, TripIt.
TripIt pings you in flight and it says the plane may be crashing right about now. Statistically, it's about 46 minutes into the flight when it ends.
TripIt's like Morpheus where your phone goes ba-doong and it says go to the back of the plane. And then you're like, I thought I had you in airplane mode. And it goes ba-ding, wait. And then ba-ding, now. And then you run to the back of the plane and you miss the stewardess. And then,
or even better, it's like TripIt like pings you. It's like, hi, I noticed you're pooping. 4 other people have reported that this door sticks. So remember to jingle the handle.
Ba-ding, 10 minutes before your flight, this is your last opportunity for pre-flight dump. Gate 16 has an awesome cripple stall. And ooh, no one wanted to laugh at that. judge me if you want, but the cripple stall is the Cadillac of stalls.
Yeah, everybody's stalling out on that one.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
Well, you know why? Right before you made that joke, TripIt pinged me to let me know you were going to be making it, and I knew to bail out.
so to speak.
If.
True. No, but that is a cool service. I'll be trying that out. Hey, so what did you guys make of the there's always another round, but another round of rumors this week that San Diego Comic-Con was thinking about moving.
Yeah, those rumors come up every couple of years. I don't put a whole lot of stock into them anymore.
I
can't imagine San Diego ever letting that convention go.
No.
San Diego's pretty poorly governed. It's a great city, but it's got a pretty terrible city council and mayor. They might be dumb enough not to do another bond issue.
Does Anaheim have more space?
Yeah. Anaheim Convention Center is awesome, but the problem with Anaheim is that it's just the shittiest town in all of Southern California.
That's where we went to BlizzCon.
You went to BlizzCon. Yeah, that's where that was and is.
But that didn't seem like a bigger convention center.
No, I don't think it was. Is it really?
Yeah. And the L.A. one is huge. The L.A. one's much bigger. So those are the two big contenders.
Well, I wish they would get more space because I'm currently frustrated right now because there's a lot of cartoonists right now that – are breaking rules and pissing me off.
Really? What?
Okay, so let's say you're a cartoon. Let's say you're a webcomic and I'm making finger quotes company. All right. And let's say this year things aren't going so awesome for you. And let's say that this year you have a lot more space than you need. And let's say that this year you really don't even have enough cartoonists to fill your existing space. And
wow.
Let's say this year, instead of just selling back your booth to Comic-Con, you decide that you're going to invite new people into your company for conveniently now. So that you can keep your space.
Yeah.
Makes it tough for those of us that want to expand because we're actually fucking succeeding still. It makes it harder for us. And it's against the rules to sublet your booth out.
Yeah, that's true.
So I wish San Diego would move to more space because I'm tired of dealing with these professionals.
Feels caliente. So that take no prisoners approach to webcomics now. Webcomics currently. It's a different kind of show.
Here's what I'm angry about this week. But there is a small part of me that wishes it would move to LA because I would love to have everybody.
Yeah, I could stay at my parents' house.
Look, here's the thing. San Diego plays by this point system, okay? And it's really no offense to Justin or the guys at San Diego, because I don't know how else they would do it. It's not like I have an alternate choice for them.
Yeah, I think they kind of have to do it that way.
But they've got a point system, right? So every year that you exhibit at one of their shows, and this includes WonderCon and stuff, you earn points. And points mean seniority, and seniority means you get to, I guess, keep booth space or maybe be first choice to expand. But there is no expanding anymore. They can't. So we've been exhibiting in San Diego since 2001. I have, okay. But it doesn't count. My points only count since 2007. No, 2008. Okay, so the first 7 years of exhibiting don't count. Because at first I was with Dorkstorm Press and my points went to that company. And then I was with Image and my points went to that company. The points don't – it doesn't matter that I paid for the booth and I've been – you know, a feature of the con, it's that those were their points. So it wasn't until Phil Folio came by and said, why are you still over here at the Image booth? Get your own booth. And then I said, okay, 2008 will be the first year. So for I only have like two or three years worth of points.
Right.
But instead of complaining or bitching, we played by the rules because that's the rules and we're a company and we're incorporated and we play by the rules. But maybe I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't play by the rules anymore.
Saying maybe you should cheat.
I think maybe I should cheat.
You should game the system.
How would you cheat? How would you give yourself points?
Let's say that Penny Arcade is in trouble. Sorry, I couldn't say that without laughing. But let's say Penny Arcade was in trouble, okay? And they decided
trouble.
they didn't want to give up their space. They could just say, hey, guess what? We're going to invite Scott Kurtz into Penny Arcade. He's a part of Penny Arcade now. So he's going to exhibit at our booth. And then they say, Scott, can you pay us $1,200 for the booth you're going to use up? And then I still have a booth. And then the next year they're like, well, Scott doesn't work for us anymore. So, but we kept our space. That's cheating to me. That's unfair.
Well, yeah, I mean, because you could add and subtract people from Penny Arcade all you wanted, depending on who's going to pony up the money for that,
like,
space.
Like last year, I think we finally figured out how to properly run the San Diego booth and not just break even. A big part of it is having an $85 item. But when we did the numbers, we really thought a lot of it was having the awesomeology. But when we did the numbers, we really figured out that a lot of it was crunching the costs and not being stupid, not just being San Diego's fun. Let's go and have a good time, you know.
Yep.
So and you have to be really careful in San Diego. You can't just wing it. So, I mean, we really we followed our trends. We figured the perfect amount to bring. We figured out how to cheaply ship to and from. We figured out the system on how to actually have stuff. Because the thing that's always killed us in the past is not shipping it from Texas to San Diego. It's shipping it from the back of the con to your booth because of all the union fees.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where now we can go do San Diego and actually really do really well money-wise at San Diego. It's worthwhile to go. But there were a couple years where it's like, do we really want to go again and deal with all that stuff in that whole week just to break even? It's not worth it. But you have to go because if you don't, you lose your spot. So there's two or 3 years where we went simply so we wouldn't lose our spot. And if I had known, all I would have had to do is just say, I'm just going to sublet my space out and just claim they're a part of PvP for the year. And it's pretty awesome. Check it out. This is my friend, No Shoes for Tuesday, and his awesome webcomic. And he's representing PvP this year.
Oh, I would not sublet to that guy if I were you, though, Scott.
No Shoes for Tuesday? He is trouble.
No, he is trouble.
He is trouble.
Trouble!
Do you guys think Keenspot will be there this year?
Yeah, I think
Keenspot was there last year.
Whoa, easy, kid. <Hey-o. laughs>
Oh, Scott, Bobby will definitely be there.
Oh, I see. Because that's a big end cap, too, that might be going back into the system.
Ooh, they're not going to give that up. That's all going to – I mean, it won't be Keenspotted, but it'll all be blatant comics.
But they need a whole end cap for just Bobby? Come on.
You wait and see.
Well, the posters are really big. I mean, this is just getting really mean now.
Is it mean? We're talking honest. This is webcomic honestly.
No, it's true. I mean, hey, all right. All right. As long as we have the positioning, then I can go along with it.
Chris, listen, you and I were talking earlier, okay, about how, like, when we're on the Daily Cartoonist or something and we're having a discussion and a back and forth, right? Either a discourse or a really intense debate with somebody. And then some guy comes in and goes, well, I think this and this and this and this, and I think Scott's right here, and I am valid in my belief because this is my awesome webcomic, and it's about a floating head, and it's about metaphysics, and it's total shit. And Chris was like, how do we tell those people, no, shut up.
It's hard, yeah. You say, look, yeah, you guys are just jealous because syndication's on the way out and web cartoonist is on the way up. Check it out. Look what I got. And it's like, oh, God, no. Don't help. Just
I don't know. I don't understand.
Build it up
why,
on your own.
I listen to a lot of tech podcasts. I listen to a lot of them. And, like, it's not like people are afraid to say, question things going on at other companies. I don't understand why we got to sit around on pins and needles about it. Like, why can't we review our own industry? Am I wrong? Wow. Okay. I guess wrong. Well, I'm going to edit this whole shit out in post now. Now you've got me scared.
I'm sorry, Scott. I didn't mean to not jump on top of the lag and immediately start speaking extemporaneously.
I guess I don't understand what you how you get from one to the other. I mean, certainly like to jump in like on a situation like Daily Cartoonist and say, you know, listen, you don't speak for web comics,
and
neither do I necessarily.
Let me back up. So I was talking about how, like trying to expand in San Diego this year, it's frustrating because no one's giving up space or just subletting it out, which is against the rules. And I'm not going to out anybody, but this is what I'm butting up heads against, okay? So I've just decided, screw it. I'll just keep the space I have. There's no need trying to expand because no one's going to work with me. They're all just going to cheat. And I'm not going to involve anybody, so who gives a shit? All right, so fine. I'll stick with my space and be happy. We did great last year. We'll do great this year, okay? But now what I'm worried about is if I talk about this, because it's cool information and it makes interesting radio, that you guys are going to be like, okay, don't be mean now, don't be mean. And when I was like, do you think Keen Spot will need space this year? And then Chris was like, wow, this is just getting mean now. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just talking industry stuff.
Right.
No, oh, okay. Keen Spot will be there because they have – they've got what, like 11, 12 years in there? No, not that long.
Oh, at least,
in the
right?
vicinity. Yeah, in the neighborhood of that. So absolutely they're going to sit on that space. Of course they will.
But if they're cutting everybody loose and they're not representing all those people, if they're just representing four or five comics that Bobby and Chris do, do they need a whole end cap? That's a lot of space.
But why not just hang on to that end cap? Because you may grow it later.
I guess you
know?
That's true.
So that's from their point of view,
it's not a question of need. It's a question of want.
Yeah, that's the thing is I think there it's a lot of it is hope comes to play in it. You know what I mean? As silly as that sounds. We don't need it this year, but I hope we need it in future years, so we better keep holding on to it, you know.
It's so funny because I don't think there's any other convention where space is such a consideration. And I know that it's not that big of a deal. Like, I was talking to Koo about it and expressing my frustration to him, and he's like, this is nothing for you to worry about anymore. I can guarantee you the extra space will be – it won't affect your bottom line at all. I mean, other than it costs you more. It will be a convenience because you'll have more room and it'll be – you'll have a so much easier time displaying stuff. Like, it would be – with all the stuff that I could bring and put up, it would just be – if I had just the double booth, it would just be so awesome, right? Like, that would be really great. So why not take the space if I could get it? But it's not going to affect the thing. But like at no other convention do I even care. I'm trying to figure out why that is. Like at Emerald City, if I only get a 10 by 10, that's plenty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even New York Comic Con, which I think is a hopping con, I'd be happy with the 10 by 10.
You know why? It was just me. It's for the same reason why somebody like Keen Spot would keep a big booth even though they might not need it. Is I think for all of us, San Diego is sort of the big enchilada. And it's sort of – I'll say it. For me, it's sort of an ego thing as much as it is a business thing to have good placement, to have a good booth, to have good – you know.
It's harder to get noticed.
Yeah. Well, also – but San Diego is like, yeah, shit's going good for my career. All right. I've got a big-ass San Diego booth. Like that's in a way, it's sort of bragging rights, you know.
Yeah.
That's why I'm so glad to hear you say controlling costs was like the saving grace, because that's the big thing for me.
Oh, it was huge.
If you keep your costs down, you can make so much money at San Diego.
You don't realize until you start to follow the money trail. And that's the bad thing about what happens with me is not that I'm not smart enough to figure this out, but it's like I don't think to look. Like it's like, how much money do we spend? How much money do we make? Oh, God, we broke even. Well, all right. But it's not like I go, no, I'm going to sit down and figure out where this money went. It wasn't until like last year that I said to Angie, we have to figure out where this money went.
Well, the hard thing for me has always been in looking at my costs is picking it apart and saying, okay, how much money did I make? All right, that's not bad. How much money did I spend? Oh, that's a lot of money. Well, what did I spend it on? Okay, I needed that. That's important. Okay, that I could have trimmed $30 off of that, but not a big deal. All right, I need this. And it's like, oh, well, okay, where do I trim? You know, I couldn't understand where the money was going.
Yeah. For us, it was learning that there was a program, and I think Angie even told me it was new, so maybe we didn't really have a choice. But there was a program where you can apply for it, and there's a certain window, and if you ship your stuff within a certain date, like you have to tell the shipping company it has to arrive between 4 and 6 on this day, then it'll be brought to your booth for free.
You know? Really?
Yeah.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah. I'll ask Angie so she can send that information to you.
That's big.
But because all that stuff is all unionized, and you got to be careful about how that stuff gets pinged.
Yeah.
And then, like, one year, I wasn't aware of it, but one year I had stepped away, and while I'd stepped away, I came back, and some guy was helping them put my booth up. And when I left, I was like, who was that? That was nice. And Angie goes, yeah, no, that was the union. Like, they were sitting there watching us, and because it took more than 20 minutes to put it up, they came and took over.
Oh, geez, really?
Yeah, and then we had to pay them.
How much did that cost?
Yeah.
I don't even want to know. Like, I don't know. Angie knows. I don't even want to know. I just.
How much of a cheapskate I am? I'd be like, they're like, all right, we're going to come help you set up. I'm like, no, I'm done. This is it. That's it. Yeah, they're like, no, but sir, you're not finished. I'm like, force me to put it up because I'm not putting anything more up.
It's a concept.
It's so pathetic. There's a rule. I think there's a rule where if you said never mind, they'll be like, all right, well, we're taking it down. You can't leave it unfinished.
Oh, you're kidding.
Really? No, it's ridiculous. It's crazy mafia stuff like that.
Yeah. But, you know, like speaking of programs that help, this last year in 2008 – or no, what am I saying 2008? 2009, I paid a bookkeeper to teach me QuickBooks. And I got to tell you guys, as far as watching where your expenses are, like down to the micro pennies, QuickBooks is so awesome for tracking how your business is doing. It's the best thing I did all year was learning that program. It's like Photoshop for business.
That's pretty impressive.
Wait, what's it called? QuickBooks?
QuickBooks. All my inventory has gone through there. All my travel expenses, all my payroll has gone through QuickBooks now. All that stuff. It's so awesome. It really – it's been amazing. It was expensive and long to learn, but going forward – it's like the reason why I compare it to Photoshop is that it's as complicated to learn, you know, in terms of software, but so worth it for my business.
Hmm.
Did I lose you guys? I did.
No, I'm just making notes, actually.
It was the It was the absolute best business decision I've made in the last maybe 4 to 5 years was learning that program.
I've got QuickBooks I'm running over here, and I'm just running maybe the tip of the iceberg on it. Because I do some very light inventory control on it. I use it to print out my invoices more than anything else. And you're right. I can see where everything fits together, and I'm not using the most smallest part of it yet.
Yeah. Well, the key that for me was I could not have taught myself it. I asked my accountant. I said, look, recommend to me a good bookkeeper in my part of LA that could come to the studio and teach me how to use it. And she did over like maybe 12 or 15 sessions.
So now, is this bookkeeper a permanent add-on to your company, or was she more of a tutor?
No, she does my books now, but I now understand everything that she does and can follow it and can input and output on my own as well. You know,
and more importantly, you're keeping everything through QuickBooks so that she can do her job more easily.
Oh yeah, and not only that, doing my corporate taxes at the end of the year, like normally it's two nights of me with papers strung all around me, you know, on the floor. And this year all I had to do was print out, and it was awesome to go to my accountant and just be like, here's my papers.
Dave,
and
QuickBooks available for the Mac?
Yeah, the one I got is hold on, let me see. QuickBooks 2010 Pro, I think. Let me see. QuickBooks 2010, what version did I get? Oh, I have a password on it. I don't say that on air.
Oh, there it is. QuickBooks Mac.
QuickBooks.
It's $199.
Yep. And worth it. Totally worth it. QuickBooks 2010 for 10. And it's really cool. They have a nice little Mac.
Here's the iCal. Hello.
But best thing I've done. So what I've done, what that's done for me in this past year is I printed out all my con numbers, and I was like, all right, not doing that con again. Okay, I'm going to spend more at this con. I can give myself that. All right, I got to spend less at that con next year. You know what I mean? You can really drill down and see which cons are worth it for you to make the expenses, and with which ones you have to really be tight on the purse strings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
And if you have any information, I guess you could go back and add. Did you just say this? Go back and add stuff from previous years to trend?
Yeah, and what's really nice to trend is I go back and I look at my notes for Emerald City last year and I say, oh, okay, I sold this many of that book, this many of that book. Oh, and I have a note here in QuickBooks that I sold out of this book, so I should bring more of that next year, you know, so. Because, you know, it can be misleading. You say, like, oh, all right, I sold 35 of that book. Well, no, you could have sold 45 if you hadn't sold out on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's an important thing to remember, you know.
To remember that you sold out. You guys sold out. You have books. Wah, wah. Okay. So are we done? That's an hour and 30 minutes. We're back.
Oh, I think
we're
back. That was a healthy podcast.
Yeah, you sounded like a doctor. Like, that's a healthy podcast.
This is looking really good.
There's some slight spotting over here on the x-ray. We're going to keep an eye on that. But overall, it's a pretty healthy podcast. For a man your age, that's a healthy podcast.
Could you lower my gown, please? No, boy. This is just looking really solid.
Can you lower my gown, please? That sounds like when you do I've been telling everyone, okay, so you know those Progressive insurance commercials with that really hyperactive woman?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Chris does this great bit, and it reminded me to do it in Emerald City because it's lacking when you can't see his face.
What was it?
But it's like the girl's like, hi, welcome to Progressive Insurance. There's a box for everything. Oh, my God, you're wearing blue. I love blue. Blah, 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 blah. And Chris just looks at you. He's holding this invisible box, and his face just drops, and he goes, can I buy my fucking insurance, please?
Can I buy my insurance, please?
Can I buy my fucking insurance, please?
That's kind of how I felt about the entire city of Austin. So...
What?
Can I continue looking at the menu, please, and make my order? I'm not interested in the dance troupe story.
Yeah. Boston is the only city that doesn't exist.
That doesn't exist? What?
Okay, so
yeah, we went to Staple, and the town of Austin
which is a fucking flea market, by the way.
Yeah, it's completely unnavigable. The city is like – it's like built on bare grounds and like old horse trails and just – it's impossible to get anywhere.
There is constant construction going on. And so no map, no written, drawn map, Google map, GPS
– is up to date.
Is up to date. So it'll be like turn left. And if you were to turn left, you would go into a median. You know, like you cannot do it. And so it's just – you're just constantly lost. You're constantly lost. And so Chris is like, well, that's it. Austin is just this Mobius strip that designs once you enter it, you can't get out. You're stuck. You're trapped inside Austin. No one ever leaves it. And so he goes, it's like when you see on TV those commercials for like the Tourist Bureau of Austin, and it's, hi, my name is, Conrad Wainwright, the mayor of Austin. And the best thing about Austin is, shh. Don't tell anybody. It's a secret. And then it just shows a lot of lost people, and he goes, Austin is the only city that doesn't exist.
Yeah, it was a great con, though.
It was a great con, yeah. If you're that a hobo.
So this is a big thumbs up from you guys then, yes?
Listen, the guy that runs Staple is really awesome. I love Uncle Staple. He's a great guy. And the guys in Austin are going to get mad at me. But I'm becoming this old crotchety fuck. Like, I'm going to turn 39 in March, and it's just like, fuck it. I'm just going to embrace it. And people are like three times last week I got an email. It's like, wow, your artwork's really improved. I'm so impressed with what's going on, PvP. You have truly become the grandfather of webcomics. And I'm like, fuck you, asshole. And so now I'm just like, you know what? Screw it. I'm crotchety. I'm pissy. I'm mad about San Diego. I want everyone off my metaphorical lawn. And, you know, Staple is great if you just got off a boxcar and all of your comics are in a little handkerchief tied around a stick. Okay? And you like setting up in dirt. Go to Staple.
This here comic, what that ails you, will fix you right up.
You had a fake red nose, and did you paint some 5 o'clock shadow on your face? And you got big shoes that squeak when you walk? Well, saddle on up to Staple and set up.
You say you want a comic? Well, let me hear you play that harmonica, boy.
Hey, what do you like mini comics? Well, let me just sit on my knee here and let me pull out my juice harp, and I will smack some spoons and tell you a story about the time that I wrote a mini comic about my
dog. Son, you like comics? No, not really. You like beans? Well, yeah, I guess I like beans. Well, help yourself with some beans and let me pitch you on my comics.
Yeah, that's what happens.
I don't have a fork, so just go ahead and scoop on right out of the can there.
They have an auditorium where they have all the panels, and you walk in, there's a big cauldron of beans with ketchup, and you can just slop yourself a tin of beans.
And there's one of those oil drums tipped over, and it's got a fire brewing out of it.
And there's a man in the corner, and he's just sitting there, and the moderator is always just like a belching hobo with a hat where the top of the hat's like popped out of it but still hanging on, like it's like, and he's just eating sardines right out of the can.
Right. And there's a squirrel in there.
Yep.
And there's the guy, and then as you round the corner to go in, it's like when you go into Pirates of the Caribbean, there's the one guy and the old dog like, I wouldn't go in if I were you.
Yeah.
But why not? And he's gone.
You can't leave a puff of smoke. Wait, old man, come back. You just hear,
yeah. Oh, wait, but why not? Oh, he's gone. Nope, he fell into a ravine. There he is. Yeah.
Nope, he's in his own urine. Nope.
And you know, the thing is, like, that's totally an old bastard's view of it, because it's like, I feel the same way about most of Austin, right? And that's where this comes from. Like, you go like, hey, let's get something to eat. Okay, what restaurant do you want? I don't know. This, according to like Urban Spoon, this place got the best burgers, and you walk in, you're like, wow, those burgers look amazing. Can't wait to order one. But then I can't hear Chris because there's some live band playing, you know, it was called the Meat Sweats or something, or, you know, you know, Hitler's Underpants, and they're screaming, and then the lady comes by and she's telling you about a boil she once had, and one time she had a really bad acid trip, and you're just like, can I order my fucking burger, please? And they're like, nope, keep Austin weird. Remember, keep Austin weird. No, how about keep Austin? I'd like a quiet evening with a burger.
Right. I remember that. It was very much like, what was it? Oh, if you can answer my three quiz questions regarding the works of Shakespeare, then perhaps I'll take 10% of it. It's like, no, all right.
What?
I'll take 10%.
What?
I have to get my ice cream.
No, yeah, it was like that. It was at their, like,
no.
You can't go to a Denny's because there are no Denny's. There's, like, the local place that is the Denny's. And then you walk in and they're like, you know how when you're in L.A. or Hollywood, every waiter and waitress is an actress model that's just wait, you know. Well, yeah. In Austin, everyone is a fucking theologian, or not a theologian, or a God damn it.
Thespian?
Philosopher.
Yes, a philosopher or a goddamn thespian that's just waiting tables until they finish their thesis. Or they're some grunge, I don't know. But they're not
these
interested.
Damn kids.
Like, in L.A., everyone is, like, they're waiting tables, and then they're auditioning. But the waiting is what they do until they get discovered. In Austin, that is them getting discovered. Like, that is their theater. Is they're the crazy hippie guy waiter, and that's their
– That's his shtick.
That's their theater. Yeah, that's their stage.
What do you do? Tuesday nights.
And you're not just going to get your food. You're going to get a performance that includes your meal.
Maybe. Scott, you're going to get a good. Point. You're going to get a good time here in Austin. You'll
get your meal.
You'll get your meal, Scott. But you're going to get a good time. We're going to get something that's going to change your life here in Austin.
I never. And amplifiers in Austin. Every time I visit, it's always a different way in and out. Like I never. It's like finding my way back to Narnia every time I need to visit. Amplifier, and they love it. Like they know their way around it. If you're from there, they're like my Mr. Tumnus. They get me around.
you're saying you enter Austin by the lamppost, and you never can find that damn lamppost again.
Yeah, I see the lamppost, and I just sit and wait. We should have ended this podcast 10 minutes ago. I'm just gonna get myself in trouble now.
Yeah, I'm done. I don't have any. Line witch and wardrobe references I can fall on.
You don't have no fallbacks for that?
No, I got nothing.
Oh, one last thing. You had Twittered that
I got Wrinkle in Time.
Here,
all right.
We're going to end on this. Dave, you had Twittered that you thought Glenn was leaving Universal?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Who is it?
It's the an editor below them, another girl left, or I guess was asked to leave. They're having cutbacks or something.
All right. Well, that's significantly,
but it's not, it's not Glenn.
Uh-huh.
Oh, all right. Great. High note to end that on.
We're going to end it on that.
Exciting. I'm glad we waited.
Oh, well, no, it's just that when we saw the news that Scripps was looking to maybe either partner or sell United, Dave was like, oh, and look, this other Twitter where someone mentioned that their favorite editor was leaving Universal might mean John Glenn's leaving Universal, but it's not.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
I'm trying to talk industry news, you assholes. I know nobody cares.
Let's talk about foods we hate.
I'm really holding out the hope that we swing back around on Sid and Marty Krofft, because that's how I would end it.
Hey, how many comics should I have in my archive before I launch my website, guys?
30.
Oh, gee. Yeah, seriously. 30, 40.
What tablet do you use?
Cintiq.
I wouldn't know where you would get another competitor to France.
Yes. Giggle funds.
this wonderful Checkmade tablet. You're going to love it. They build them right there in Prague. They're beautiful.
Hey, welcome to Chuck's tablet. I got your tablets.
Can I draw on it? No, it's just a tablet. I'm Chuck. I don't understand. What do you do? Put it in your mouth. It's a tablet.
You're going to be a great artist. Trust me.
It'll take you special places in your art.
I kind of wish that I had the mini Cintiq with me when I was in California, because drawing on my tablet was a pain in the butt. I've really gotten used to the Cintiq.
And you got a mini Cintiq as well?
No, I've used Bill Barnes's mini Cintiq.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a much lower resolution than the one I use, but it was completely workable. And it just kind of, I thought I'd never need this. Like, I'll just take a tablet if I go somewhere. I would never need a mini Cintiq, but like, working on a tablet this last 2 weeks was just a huge pain in the butt. It's so different. Mm. I've just gotten so used to the tablet, or the Cintiq, that using an Intuos is difficult. Super hard. Super hard. Wah! I'm Scott Kurtz. Wah! I don't have enough space in San Diego. Wah! What is wrong with me? Staples for hobos. Wah!
It's been a good night for venting, I think.
Maybe we should call the show Webcomics Winely.
No.
Everybody just died. All right, cut it there. Scott. Uh-huh. Cut it there.
I'm going to stop recording now. Hold on.
We're done. Thank you.